everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. My name is Michael Bailey and I'm with David Freezer and Peter Raven to discuss the weekend's action, which was, of course, Norwich City being held 1-1 by Alec Neil's Preston North End. Now, we've got lots of things we can talk about. As always, if you're listening out there, get your questions in to us on social media and whatever, and we can hopefully discuss it over the forthcoming podcasts. But I think I saw, just as I came into the pod, gentlemen, I saw a tweet from a Norwich fan saying, "Roll on Friday, Cardiff, yeah." Someone genuinely excited about it. And I thought, maybe we're getting too bogged down in all of this negativity of Norwich being mediocre. So maybe with this podcast, we should embrace the mediocrity. Dave, you up for that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think in isolation that game on Saturday was that bad. I thought it was reasonably entertaining, to be perfectly honest. But obviously, there's a lot left to be desired from a Norwich point of view. But the point is that it's a seventh home game without a win, isn't it? So that's where the frustration stems from. But yeah, I mean, other than it being the longest trip of the season, bring it on.
Bring it on, Pete. You won't be going to Cardiff, will you?
I definitely won't be going to Cardiff. I've been there, I've done that. But it's a test, isn't it? It's probably the best thing they need after what's been going on at home recently. I think Cardiff, are they undefeated at home?
I don't know off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, they're second in the table, aren't they? Yeah. Another good result yesterday. Was it one at Forest?
Yeah. 2-0, where Norwich lost, of course, last midweek. I mean, it took you a few hours to work out whether you'd actually been in the game on Saturday, didn't it, Pete?
I think that's the tale of the season, especially at home. They just seem to be merging into one. The Barnsley game was one to forget pretty much at the final whistle. I can't remember the last time I'd seen them play, or just the general performance, atmosphere, everything was just dire for that. Like Dave says, Saturday was an improvement. I thought the first half, both from the crowd and the players, you could tell there was a bit more atmosphere.
Yeah.
Always helps when there's a decent away following, which wasn't the case on Saturday. But I think that first half, there was a lot there to be positive about. Second half, a bit less so, really. I guess it was just Preston's ball for most of it, but it's not fun to watch at the moment at home.
So no one's too worried about things getting worse. That we're getting bogged down. I find myself in a curious position that, you know, you see them struggle against reasonably average teams. They're playing nice football, but they don't really look like scoring a lot of goals. They look susceptible to mistakes, but they are without a lot of players at the moment, Dave. So, you know, there's mitigation there in terms of the characters they're missing, and I don't know, there's just a weird feeling around the place. I don't really like it.
Well, there's definitely worries there's no doubt about that, but at the end of the day, it's 2-1-1 draws at home and a narrow 1-0 defeat away from home in midweek, which they could have won. You know, they only lost by one goal at Bolton. They should have won that game as well, so they're not that far away. I think that's the frustration of it. If they were taking their chances at the moment, they could be back in playoff contention. And we use the phrase small margins or fine margins, whatever you want, in terms of sport and football a lot. And if ever that was shown, it was that Josh Murphy chance in the first half, wasn't it? He beat the keeper to the ball, which is probably the harder thing to do, used his pace, and then you've just got to hit the ball, haven't you? The goal is at your mercy. The Barkley are there waiting to celebrate with you. And it was just literally like he had a brain freeze. He just did not know what to do. And he gave Fisher the time to get back and make the block, while he sort of thought, should I pass to Oliveira? Oh no, I probably won't. Oh, I'll just kick it to his shins. And it all sort of fell apart from there, certainly from his point of view. So yeah, they're not getting thumped 4-0 at Millwall at the moment. That's not the way it's going. And I think everyone can probably see that if you had Alex Tetti there and perhaps Tom Tribal and a fit Alex Pritchard, then they'd probably be edging these games if you could just get that little bit more confidence into them.
Undoubted high point of Saturday, as opposed to the bizarre point. The high point was Alex Pritchard coming back, wasn't it, Pete? Because he is, I mean, I remember the end of last season writing it probably every week, build this team around this guy. This guy is the future. I mean, since then we've had the emergence of a very, very good other midfielder. But Alex Pritchard, to have him back firing would be such a boost, wouldn't it? I mean, not in a Nelson Oliveira, it'd be great if he was back. Oh, where's his form gone?
Where's he gone? I think high point does a disservice to Madison's free kick, but
yeah,
yeah, certainly you saw his name on the bench, you just thought, oh, he's low on numbers, gives a little boost, might see him come on for a few minutes. But when he came on, you saw flashes of it. That one that was curling towards the top corner was just like his goals against Brighton last season and what he does. It's great to have him back if he's fully fit, and I can't imagine they would risk him if he wasn't. Wasn't he supposed to play in the under-23s the next day and got pulled?
Yeah, I think he had a sore neck. To be honest, they may not have explained to Alex that the fact that he'd got 10-15 minutes, they maybe didn't want to put him through a whole hour within 24 hours later, but still.
But it's like you said, in the summer, build the team around him. Before Maddison emerged, you could say he's easily our most valuable player. he's the one that will go for most in the summer. great to have him back. I guess a little bit early, isn't it, than predicted?
Yeah, slightly, probably by a week or three.
It's like having a new player again, and it's, hopefully he can come on for a bit more against Cardiff and take it from there.
The interesting, you think he would be the most valuable player at the moment, because James Maddison keeps doing these clean things.
In the summer, before the emergence of James Maddison, he was...
Oh, last summer?
No, before this season started, yeah. But what Maddison's done since then, and because he's young as well, you expect him to go for a fair whack.
We've got to talk about all these players going, I suppose, haven't we? But what a free kick again, Dave. We were right behind it in the press box. Better than his one against Reading?
Marginally, I would say. I mean, we did have a fantastic view of it in the press box. As soon as he hit it, you thought, that is in. And it was just that he'd taken a corner just before it, hadn't he? The one that Hanley headed wide at the back post, because he just couldn't quite get a proper sight of the ball, could he? And that was similar in that he lifted the ball really high, and it made it very difficult for the defence and the keeper to get anywhere near it. And it was the same with that one. It had so much height on it that Maxwell had absolutely no chance. And I thought it was a really cracking goal. And there is no way that any Premier League scout is unaware of James Maddison. Now, if anybody is looking for that kind of player, if you're a Tottenham thinking, long-term replacement for Dele Alli or something like that, and you want to go and spend a bit of money in January, then you can probably get him, particularly if you offer to loan him back to Norwich for the rest of the season, because he's now shown his ability. I don't think there's sort of much questioning over it now. It's just whether he continues to do it through till January now, as to whether it will be January or in the summer, really.
Yeah, it's Christian Eriksen, isn't it? That's the one who I could see Maddison replacing. But how important come January is it, Pete, that these players stay at Norwich? Because I think, obviously, if Norwich don't go up this year, they're going to most likely sell whoever offers come in for because of the money that's available. But in terms of January, and a lot of people are saying, well, obviously we need another striker, we need this, that and the other. I mean, none of that is happening unless Norwich sell players first. So how important is it that they actually keep hold of these players? Or because they may be... people might come in and offer to buy them and then loan them back and all sorts that Norwich will have to contemplate.
I think if you sell one or two of those in January, you're then signalling your intent to stay in this division, unless that money is used, like you say, for a top class striker, which isn't going to be cheap. But it's you'd want to hold on to all of them. I know that, like you say, they've got to sell to buy. If one or two went and a decent striker came in, I think the fans would be happy. But if you saw a Maddison or a Pritchard leave, on top of what they've seen so far this season, that's not going to go down well.
Which does kind of tie into the week we're in, doesn't it? Because we've got the AGM on Thursday, where we'll all be along to that. And they can be lively affairs, but, generally... Wednesday?
Wednesday, I think.
What did I say?
Thursday.
Did I say Thursday?
Thursday, Michael.
I definitely meant Wednesdays. I don't know why I said Thursday, but it's definitely Wednesday night. And alongside that, of course, we had the attendance on Saturday. We were just... being chipped away at it. It was just above 25,000 on Saturday.
Are you sure?
Yes. It was definitely just above 25,000. And season ticket renewals is the other thing, of course, that's going to come up. And as you've kind of summed up, Pete, the atmosphere around the home fans, I saw some season ticket holders who were saying, I'm having to pay £30 for a game, yet casual tickets are a tenner. In some places, I don't know, I haven't checked any of that out. That could be complete lies because it was on the social medias. But just sort of ties into a lot of the feelings around the place, and as I've kind of touched on, I'm very negative at the moment. But it'll be interesting how all that stuff manifests, and I guess the start of that comes on Wednesday at the AGM.
Well, AGMs don't tend to be happy places in general, do they? Because it's kind of the place where people air their gripes with the board. I mean... everyone will remember the dramatic moment last year when someone asked Delia about the sausage rolls, and the whole Norfolk lounge was shocked. But no, obviously there are important issues to be discussed, people to be re-elected to the board, and I'm sure there will be some, well, in a way, I hope some difficult questions are asked. I'd like to know if the board are even contemplating looking at investment. I know they're not looking at selling the club, they've made that very clear, but I don't see any reason why they can't discuss somebody coming onto the board and bringing fresh investment to the club, as long as it's the right person. I don't want to see some random Chinese conglomerate with a load of money but a faceless management sort of system overruling the club, because you can see how badly that goes wrong, and we know that Delia and Michael and Ed Balls and Michael Folger, all those guys who are at the top of the club, have the best interests of the club at heart. But football is moving on. You need money to compete, even in the Championship now. So, you know, we need to know what the plan is going forward, because as well as this new regime which has gone in with Stuart Webber as sporting director and Daniel as the head coach, yet if you haven't got the money to fund them, then it reduces the likelihood that it's going to be successful. It's not impossible, obviously, because Huddersfield did it without spending too much money, but when you've got Wolves spending the amount of money they have and plenty of other clubs with money to spend who aren't even in the top six, you look at Sheffield Wednesday, you know, they've spent a huge amount of money compared to Norwich and they've still not managed to get up. So they've got to at least accept that that's an issue that fans are talking about and want to, you know, hear some kind of guidance from the people who are in charge of the club. If they're not doing that, why not?
This is a very difficult season because of last season the parachute payments. So there is, with that, expectancy that they've got the money to compete. It kind of feels like maybe after this season, once that's gone, however they deal with it in the summer, at least we'll all know where we are. You know, a club with not a lot of money trying to put together a side that can surprise everyone. And the expectations probably disappear at that point as well. But the question then I have is, how many Norwich fans are happy with that? How many Norwich fans want that? Will 22,000 people still want to be involved in a club that's doing that? And that's not me saying yes or no, because if the fans know what it is that they're coming to watch and they're coming to support, they will back it.
Yeah, and it's the majority of clubs in the Championship are going to be in a similar position to us. I mean, the only difference is with us, I guess, that debt is very, very small. You look at, what is it, just look at the table here, Hull, Sunderland recently from the Premier League. It's not now a case of parachute payments guarantee you bouncing back up to the Premier League.
They were never supposed to. All they were supposed to do is stop a club going bankrupt because of the massive drop in revenue.
And you think at the next accounts, that hole is going to be filled partially by, I guess, Murphy, Harrison, and I think Dorans as well. But then after that, you just think, are we going to be going back to like the times when we were just a selling club just to keep afloat in the Championship? I'm the same with Dave. I don't want to see some faceless corporation take over, but we have to face facts that money is needed, and the current model, you can't really say it's working, can you?
It's difficult because Delia and Michael themselves came in offering investment into a club that needed it, and they've explored that in the past. Now, I know that the debt burden perhaps isn't there now, but maybe there is always room to ask for help if you feel that the club will need it, but it's then what you do with the money. I'm sure that the club will be looking at how they can best develop Colney, because the academy is initially, at this moment in time, really important to prove what it can do for the club going forward.
There's a lot of weight in that money, though, hasn't it?
Well, if it doesn't, then the speculation about what happens to it in the future is going to be extremely valid. It has got to start producing in these next 2 years, otherwise why would you bother funding it? That's the reality of it. So yeah, lots of deep issues which will come up across this week, I'm sure, in between now and Christmas. But there was a game on Saturday. Well, you know, we touched on the free kick. It went on and on. I know that some people said they were like, they couldn't believe how long they were at Carrow Road. They almost needed to be put out of their misery by the end of it. But Spud, I don't think I've ever quite experienced something like it at Carrow Road, as seeing Spud on the monitor disappearing now and to be fourth official. And I know he's done it before, but that's the first time I've really recorded it actually happening, and obviously the first time it's happened when I've reported on a game. And it was just wow.
It was bizarre. I mean, and also, was it really? I guess there's some regulation rules. You've got to have a fourth official. But it's what, 8 minutes to go. all they need to do, the referee just needs to signal someone to the side and they can say over the tannoy, 10 minutes left, and bring a sub on. It doesn't need holding up for what was, what, 5-10 minutes, and I guess at some point thinking they're going to call the game off. It was just ridiculous. There should be something in place where... What if another one had got injured? Would Spud be then running the line?
Yes, you know, but if it kept going that way, he could have been refereeing. I mean, it got very strange because as far as we were led to believe, the game could have carried on without a fourth official. I actually thought when the referee was speaking to both managers, it was much more about, look, there's no fourth official between the two of you, don't have a scrap. Yeah. But actually, it turned into, oh, here's all the players, we need to have a chat, we need to find someone. And you know, much like the fact that as an official, Spud... who is, of course, David Thornhill, lifetime Norwich fan, Stato and all sorts, top guy. He officially wasn't allowed to speak to anyone after the game, which is why we didn't get any interviews on Saturday. By Sunday, no one gave a flying whatever, and away he went. And he spoke to us, and there's his comments on the Pinken website, pinken.com. But yeah, funny old farce. And we had such a long delay, probably 15 minutes, I think they played in the end. Players getting injured... or, you know, feeling their muscles go in all sorts in the break.
It was confusing for people in the stands, wasn't it? Because it was confusing for us in the press box, and we probably knew what was going on before everyone else because we had the TV screens. But it was hilarious when we saw Spud pop up because he's so well known around here. And it was a nice sort of memorable moment, but it did completely ruin the end of the game because both teams really lost any momentum at all. And other than Preston chucking the ball into the box a couple of times and it sort of hitting Hopes, there wasn't really much that happened once the game got restarted, other than Norwich's free kick, of course, which, you know, they had to wait, what, 10 more than 10 minutes to actually take it.
I think there was Barkhuizen's chance, I think, when he was through and in happened as well, which was actually a great bit of goalkeeping from Gunn because he was right through. I mean, that said, Hanley and Steeperman looked like they were still wondering who Spud was as Barkhuizen ran through them. But and yeah, like I said, it sort of killed the end of the game, didn't it, Dave? And we all settled for a point and shuffled on our way.
Yeah, and from Alex Neil and Daniel Farke's point of view, that they were just worried about injuries, really. And like you say, a few players did go down because they were starting to get cold because it was a cold day already. So they weren't particularly impressed by what happened, but I think by that point everybody was just a bit like, all right, it's a draw, let's just leave it there and go home, because it was just becoming a bit ridiculous.
A lot of people left, hadn't they, before the game even restarted.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And as you mentioned, it was Alec Neil's Norwich City return, the first time he'd been back to Carrow Road since his sacking, or certainly that we were aware of anyway. You can hear from Daniel Farke and Alec Neil on the Pinken YouTube channel, which is of course youtube.com/thepinkenchannel. Loads of stuff on there too. And you can hear from Alex Pritchard on our Pinken podcast feed. But I noticed from Alec he was kind of buzzing around afterwards. He seemed pretty... I know he'd have much rather have won, of course, but he seemed... I got the impression he was just happy that his side had gone there, played really well, and maybe just proved that little point for him.
Yeah, I think he did come back at the end of last season, didn't he, for the Brighton game, wasn't he? He was in the Sky studio.
Oh, that's right.
So, but of course, fans couldn't really see him or anything on the day there, I don't think, unless he was on the pitch, I suppose. But yeah, he was fine. You know, he was quite happy after the game. He was very pleased with his team's performance and thought that they probably... had the better of the game and could have won it, which I'd probably say on balance it is fair enough. Once the press and media had sort of got their questions out of the way, I asked him a few questions about his return and stuff like that, and he admitted that it had felt a bit strange, but he hadn't been expecting to get any stick and didn't feel he got any, and there wasn't any boos or cheers or anything really in his way. I don't think people were too worried about it in the end. There was more stuff going on, wasn't there, than Alex Neil. So he probably travelled home fairly satisfied with his day's work, and there was no real issues, was there?
It was weird because I actually thought it seemed to bypass everyone. Did you think that, Pete?
Yeah, but that, I mean, just because of the game, had there been like an incident or maybe a late winner for us, there might have been some reaction to him, or say if Preston had taken the lead and then the Preston fans might have asked him for a wave, but there was nothing in the game that led to that, so it's just why it's... It's just another manager at the end of the day, wasn't it?
There was no Paul Lambert marching across the field to celebrate with the Villa fans after the League Cup quarterfinal, was
there? There was no Ian Holloway shenanigans either. So.
Well, Jurgen Klopp, glasses being broken.
Those bloody glasses. Is there anything else anyone wanted to touch on in the game? I can't really think of many other major incidences, but...
Well, Madison and Wes linked up nicely just after the break, didn't they? And really, really good tackle from Ben Davies to stop Wes scoring. And Josh, again, had a pretty much an open goal to shoot at and managed to shoot against Darnell Fisher's shins. And he sunk to the turf and you sort of felt for him at that point, didn't you? That really summed up how things are for him. I feel sorry for him. I mean, he's got 7 goals in all competitions. You'd have thought that there'd be a bit more confidence there, but... It just won't click for him, will it?
When he took that goal at Arsenal, wasn't the same player that fluffed his lines on Saturday, was he?
He loves the League Cup. I mean, you say he scored 7 goals all season. Was it 5 of them? 4 of them in the League Cup? So they are different competitions.
There was a little bit of hotheadedness just afterwards as well, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I think that was just frustration, wasn't it? From the
squared up to Paul Huntington, didn't he? Which was, it takes a brave man. In terms of positives, I thought Grant Hanley was pretty good again. I think he's pretty much established himself now and deserves a decent run in the team. Negatives, Mario Rancic again really just didn't look up to standard for the Championship, and there's a lot of people I think who have made up their minds on him. I think most of us had a thought early season that you could see that there were that he had attributes there, but you presumed that he would get up to the standard of the Championship and start to show what a good player he was, but for me that's not happened. And Nelson Oliveira I thought was very poor on Saturday.
Oh, gosh.
Just every ball in the air, he's not a target man. He just stood there with his arms out while the defender just headed the ball over him. If that had been Jerome, there would have been boos from the crowd. Patience is wearing thin with him from the crowd.
It wasn't even when the ball was played to his feet. I mean, and again, Norwich's attacking woes, when how often did it just come down to Oliveira trying to shoot from range or just hitting against someone's shins and all sorts of funny decisions, really, which that sort of belies, I guess, Norwich's problems in front of goal at the moment. Likewise, their defending, I think I saw a few people picking up on zonal marking being the issue for the goal conceded. I mean,
and also trying to run the ball out of play when it was never going to go out.
No. I think, in fairness to Christoph Zimmermann, played pretty well, I thought.
Yeah.
But that point, I thought that Jordan Hugo had got into his head a little bit following the couple of elbows, and he just probably that was partly why that came about. I mean, I don't think it is zonal marking. The zonal marking wasn't the reason for the conceding of the goal. It was that Francic and I think it was Zimmermann got a wrong man, then they lost the initial header, so it's individual errors. But I mean, are they defending worse than they were in that good run, or is it just a problem being that they can't get them? Well, no, they did get a header. I mean, they have led at both of these two home games and not won either of them, so they were enough goals before.
The difference with that run is they haven't got Tetti in front of them. He's such a huge loss. That's not taken away from Reed or Tribal. Tribal looked tired the last few games, and like Dave said, Vrancic has been fairly invisible, but it's that protection that Tetti offers. Is you've got to include him in that run of clean sheets as one of the reasons why we kept them all. It's not anything against the back four, and Hanley has impressed. It's just they just need a bit more protection in front of them, which has been especially home the last few games. I think, didn't we end the Barnsley game, we didn't even have a central midfielder on?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I mean, you're right, Alex Tetti. I think it was 1-5 before we started. Then they won. They only dropped 2 points out of the next 5 he played in, and I think they've only won 1 since he's been injured. So, it is that. But is it also just a lack of having a player like Alex Tetti that can slip in, because Harrison Reed isn't. He hasn't got that defensive intelligence in terms of covering positions. Not that I've seen, anyway. He's much more of a ball player and move the ball around. And don't get me wrong, Harrison Reed I really like. He's a good player. He covers a lot of ground. He can get stuck in. But having the positional sense, maybe it comes with experience, but I would also say it comes with that positional sense of playing in a more defensive role. Tom Tribal is nowhere near. He doesn't have that at all, as far as I can see. And if him playing alongside Tetti was a key cog. So, maybe out of all the positions Norwich really need to strengthen, it would be finding that kind of player.
Well, the unbeaten run was exceptional, wasn't it? At one point, they'd conceded 2 goals in 7 games, I think. I mean, clearly, that doesn't continue in football. No team manages to continue at that rate throughout a whole season, even if you're, the unbeatables and you're Arsenal. You don't concede that few goals over the piece. Tetti is hugely important, and Harrison Reed, the last 2 games, has battled gamely, as far as I'm concerned. But as I've said throughout the season, he just doesn't have the physicality. He, just purely he is small. there's not much he can do about that, is there? You compare him to Ben Godfrey, I mean, he must have a foot nearly on him. And, you know, he's a big, muscly guy for, what, 19, 20 years old. I know some of the Shrewsbury fans have sort of compared him to like a truck or a tractor or whatever, overrunning things in midfield in League One. He's got to be back here in January, as far as I'm concerned, because Tetti's always going to pick up yellow cards, and perhaps there's going to be a risk of a red card or whatever. And because of the physical nature, he does get injured now and again, doesn't he? And his knees struggle with two games in 4 days, etc. Like you say, Tribal isn't a straight replacement for him, so there has got to be another option like that, because, you know, it's no surprise that unbeaten run came at one point. Closer Tribal and Tetti had like not lost a game and not conceded a goal for what 6 weeks or something stupid, wasn't it? So they've got to get back towards that. And once Close is fit again as well, hopefully him and Hanley can form a bit of a partnership, because we've seen a few mistakes from Zimmerman now, haven't we, unfortunately, because he does a lot of good things as well, but he's played a lot of football. So I think Close and Hanley is probably the strongest partnership if they can build a bit more of a relationship. But until Tetti's back, I'm not sure. You've just got to start taking your chances. You've almost got to go Kevin Keegan, haven't you? We'll score more than you, because there's not much point trying to defend.
Well, this is the irony, and I'm pretty sure Daniel Farke would love I think he arrived at the club wanting to play as many of his attacking midfielders as possible. I think we saw that in the opening games. They were so open because he wanted that attacking threat all the way through. If Pritchard, Wes and Maddison had all been fit, I think they'd all have started, personally. And that sort of brings it full circle to what he does now that Alex Pritchard is fit, and how he slips in. But, for wanting to be that open and expansive and really going at teams, they don't half fail to score a lot of goals. But there we go. Right, I think we've covered all bases there, and we've gone on a fair time. So we're going to wrap it up. But hopefully we'll be doing these nice and regularly now in future, all being well. Cardiff, predictions? Should I get a couple of predictions in for you,
Pete? 2-0 Cardiff.
2-0.
Oh, Pete.
After all that,
just bang.
It is Neil Warnock's 69th birthday on Friday night. Well, Friday.
Yeah, hasn't he been in football 50 years now or something? I saw a story on the BBC website. I did predict 1-1 on Saturday on the old Twitteroony.
Yeah.
Friday. I don't know. I've got a feeling they're going to go and win again. I mean, we went to Cardiff in February, didn't we? I think it was February, and they won 1-0 because of Jerome, and I think they'd only won one of their last 20 yes. away games or something at that point.
That was the turning point, that game, when they'd finally learnt how to win ugly.
Sort of. So, Cardiff are clearly going to expect to win the game. Norwich aren't going to have too much pressure. I've got a feeling they might nick it, which would be bizarre, but I'm gonna go with it. 1-0.
That's good for you, Dave. Well done. I have a horrible feeling that between Cardiff away, Sheffield Wednesday at home and Leeds away, I don't think we're going to see many points in that time. But hey, as always, I'd love to be proven wrong. So thank you very much, gents. Much appreciated. Thanks all for listening. You guys, let us know your thoughts. You know how to get hold of us. Pinken.com on Twitter, Facebook page, fb.me/thepinken, and the YouTube channel. There's loads of ways, and we generally pick up your messages, and if we don't like them, we ignore them, and if we do, we'll get back in contact with you. Much appreciated, and good luck to Norwich City, of course, on Friday. We'll have full live coverage for you over at pinken.com, all the build up, all the analysis as usual. We'll see you there. Goodbye.